Houston is hot, but the people are cool. You are in Rhonda's Lounge listening to Artist of Houston podcast. Stick around, listen up. It's going to be great. Hi, H-Town. You are back in Rhonda's Lounge. Have a seat. We are about to listen to an interview with Mr. Ron Gordon. He is in the Spring Street Studios. The actual address is 1824 Spring Street, zip code 77007. It's in 3rd Ward, Houston, part of the complex of the Sawyer Yards. His studio number is 119. And Ron is a dynamic dude who's been painting and teaching. He's another fella I met at one of our happy hours where all the artists congregate and get to meet each other and have a fellowship sort of thing. And I really enjoy those times. And I got to meet him a few months ago and made a studio visit. His very cool studio, it's chock-a-block with different works. He has a great evolution of where he's been, where he's going. And I'm sure you're gonna enjoy our conversation. So I want to invite you to sit down and listen. And remember, you can find Ron Gordon at Studio 119 in Spring Street Studios. Second Saturdays are open there as well. 2 to 7, they have longer times. And you can meet Ron there. You can reach him at gordonpaint@yahoo.com. And listen up.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm honored. A pleasure to be here, and I love your studio.
Thank you. I work hard at making it be what, you know, I'm always working on it.
Well,
I just try to, you can see what happened over there. Yeah, it's a lot of construction in this studio all the time.
Well, you haven't been to mine lately, have you? It's a mess all the time. It's starting to really gnaw on me how disheveled it's gotten, and it's hard to work and do all, you know, we were talking about that earlier. That's one of the biggest problems that artists face is the need to do all these maintenance things.
Exactly.
That take so much time and energy, and mm-hmm. they're necessary, but they keep your productivity down. You make you be so much more productive.
I don't know what happened to the elves and fairies that were supposed to get that stuff done for me.
I think they were eaten by very large trolls.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
probably, that was a story I heard, yeah.
Oh,
well, it was especially sad for the trolls because they got sick. It was bad all around. Yeah.
I couldn't use that.
Apparently, fairies don't go down well.
No.
They come up really fast.
Oh.
Yeah. With a flutter.
Yeah, with a flutter. Oh, my God. That's pretty good. You can see, listening right now, Ron is a vivacious personality. So.
And I'm tall, too.
And you're tall.
Can you see that?
Yeah.
This is so cool.
Yeah. I do need to take pictures of us sitting under this lovely little canopy sound booth. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Not now.
It looks like something out of Sheiks of Araby. I mean, it's just positively Bedouin.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like that one.
Yeah.
Actually, everyone has been on the podcast. They've had some sort of description, so yours is awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. So, okay, Ron, officially.
Mm.
We're officially talking.
Okay, officially.
That's right. So, first question.
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
No, I ask everybody, did you go to art school?
I did not go to art school, but I went to the University of Southern Mississippi. That's a plug, by the way. I expect a royalty on that. Yeah,
we need a paycheck.
That's
Southern
right,
Mississippi. Okay.
But the reason I mention that is because Southern is not a place anybody would expect to be an art school. But in fact, we got some really good instruction. There were some great professors there. My degree's in art education, Also, my master's work was in art ed. The painting lab, the painting instructors, also in commercial art, drawing, all of that, they, I think, were determined, because it was not an art school or not known for its art department, to work harder and make us work harder.
Oh, yes. Prove yourself.
Yeah, well, there's also a lot of theory involved with that, and there was a drive there for everybody to be Cézanne, and so, and also the whole impressionistic movement seemed to color everything, and yes, that was an intended pun. Mm-hmm. So we learned color theory, and across crossing over to the art education department, I learned a lot about teaching art methods, and the requirements for my major included all of the art forms and all the crafts. So I did everything from textiles to jewelry to sculpture to, and certainly a lot of painting and drawing, and got a full and just got a full smattering of everything, and that, I think, for me, was ideal. Mm-hmm. I'm sure others would have liked to have concentrated in one discipline, but for me, to be able to do and learn all of those things, and of course, I went on to do I nearly completed my master's. I only lacked a couple of classes, actually, to finish. Mm-hmm. And, did what a lot of people do. Got married and had a child. And
life happens.
Yeah. And yeah. Never finished the master's, which is why I'm not teaching at the university right now, because that's the other thing I'd like to do. Okay. I love teaching.
It's always time.
Yeah, well, sure, right. Uh-huh, yeah.
Lucky,
Well, you got to remember what happened to the fairies. I mean, there's no helpers.
No.
And there's no complaints. I mean, it is what it is. We're having a great time doing what we do.
Yeah, great. So art education was a big part of your career.
That's how I started out, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So,
well, you know, the parents insisted you have to have something to fall back on.
I know.
So, yeah, and that's the way I think a lot of people end up in art education.
Yeah.
Falling back.
I kind of look at that kind of thing very positively, though, mm-hmm. You know, because
sure.
It takes the pressure off.
True.
Because making money as an artist is, you know, it's like a fairy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a fairy to nowhere. over a very wide
yes,
mass of water, yeah.
Out there, which is just so sad because it's so true.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, you know what you say to an artist when they come to your door?
What's that?
Well, you thank them, and then you pay them for the pizza.
Huh.
Yeah.
But again, I really do embrace it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm glad I got a job, and then it takes the pressure off, and then I can really concentrate on the work.
And I envy you for
doing,
that.
Doing, well, it's been back and forth, you know. Mm-hmm. You're like, you beat yourself up that you're not a real artist.
No, I don't know if there's any lack of reality to what you do. And that's something I guess I'm overly defensive about, because I really do see that people who have a so-called day job, in order to practice their craft or their art, really have to work harder. And I just have a lot of admiration for that.
Thank you.
Truly.
Yeah.
And I'm a slacker, so, you know, doing both was just never... Also, I tend to focus on whatever I'm doing and get easily distracted. So I had a lot of difficulty trying to... Even when I was a public school teacher, trying to switch back and forth. I'd mm-hmm. stay up all night and be sluggish in the classroom, mm-hmm. or I'd get really involved in the project I was doing at school and go for months without doing anything creative personally.
Yeah.
So I just long ago realized that didn't work as well for me as it did for other people.
Yeah. You've had a long career, though. You've had a lot of...
It's been in and out.
Yeah. I was looking at your website,
mm-hmm.
and even though I was in your studio, I did see some... Portrait. I thought I saw a portrait.
Yes.
A copy of a portrait that's in the studio. I don't mm-hmm. remember. It's been a few months. But anyway, you're a very accomplished portrait painter, which
Thank
is
you.
My forte, the thing that I always aspire to.
I love your
to.
Work, too, by the way.
Thank you. But you also have the abstractions
mm-hmm.
and the collages that are kind of like in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Abstraction and realism.
That's right. I tend to think of the collage work as impressionistic.
Yes, it's very. It's beautiful, too.
And that's the that's the goal there, is that the collage should look like a painting from a distance. At first blush, it should look like an impressionistic painting. And as you get closer, you realize what the materials are and, yeah. and then you get a little closer and you start seeing the little secrets that are hidden in the scraps of paper.
That makes for a very interesting artwork. Mm-hmm. That's really good.
Well, it's been well received. Most of the collage work that I've done has ended up in children's hospitals. And so the themes have typically been very whimsical mm-hmm. and appropriate for that setting. And we just keep doing them as long as people order them. I don't tend to do those speculatively because they are so labor intensive.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And they tend to sprawl out over the whole studio and keep much of anything else from happening.
I see. And yeah, because they're large too. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, I've talked to a couple people about the difficulty with working in large formats. And mm-hmm. actually got some good ideas from some people. Like, mm-hmm. don't drive a regular car.
That's right.
Buy
a truck,
a van,
SUV, something, yeah.
Yeah, first of all, because mm-hmm. no point in making that work when you can't haul it to where it needs to go. Mm-hmm. So tell me more about the Children's Hospital or the commissions that you've done for.
Well, I've done
you've done a lot of public space.
I have, and that's because of a working relationship with one particular consulting group. National group, and they're located here in Houston, and that goes back several years. I haven't always done work with them, and I haven't done that much. It's just that it's been extended over a period of 10 years, so it's not like I'm doing a lot with them every year, but over the years it's been cumulative, and I just really enjoy doing the hospital work. It's a nice respite from some of the other things that I do. Mm-hmm. And then, too, there's a psychology for that type of painting or collage. There's a philosophy and a psychology, as I said, that goes with that, and I think that meets. There's a melding there with my own personal philosophy as well. So,
which is?
Well, I believe art should be made to see, mm-hmm. and I believe that all art is storytelling. Even the non-objective, even the things that perhaps the imagery may be strange to some folks, just like another language might be strange to someone else, and dialects, I think, are part of that storytelling. There are traditions in storytelling, and I think there are obviously traditions in painting that relate somewhat to that. Of course, you can make all sorts of parallels in visual arts to music, but in terms of telling a story, there are lots of stories to be told, and there are lots of different dialects. You know, I've talked about this before, and I've also written about it. It just seems to me that that's often when folks say, well, I don't get this. Well, that's okay. That's just not your language.
There you go. I love that.
That's okay. And maybe I'm not speaking it clearly anyway.
That's
you know,
right.
And there's a lot of folks that stutter when they talk. So there's, those communication issues come up. But
I love that. Well, that's good.
Well, it's an analogy. Well, again, as I'm... may have referenced before, the reason that I enjoyed art education as a starting point was because I also enjoyed teaching. Mm-hmm. I just enjoy talking.
I hear people
and
say,
listening.
If you want to learn something, be a teacher.
That's exactly, yes. That's exactly the way it works for me.
I love that idea.
Yeah,
too.
I learned so much of what I learned. You know, to skip a little bit, I was 10 years away from, actually 15 years away from art altogether. My brushes were in boxes.
Wow.
And I didn't have time during those years to even, when I would try to do something, it usually ended up creating a problem. As I mentioned before, I'd work late into the night and then...
You had a family.
Yeah, that too.
Which is a huge thing.
It is. Yeah. And then we were particularly tight. I became the director of a private church school, and my children went to the same school, of course, and that was the desire of my heart, was that they'd get into private education. I didn't anticipate that I would be part of it. That's just how it turned out.
Yeah, as life so frequently does.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I try to say. Just trust and wait. It's coming.
Yeah.
It'll do.
Well, this was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And
but no painting in the meantime.
No.
You took a hiatus. You were still germinating, I'm sure. Things.
Oh, I'd go to sleep at night thinking of paintings.
Of course.
Yeah, I'd project sometimes just sitting there in the office, and I'd look on the wall and I'd see what I wanted to do if I ever got a chance to do it again.
Right. Okay, so you said that you believe that art is a visual experience.
And also a visual language.
Visual language.
Yeah,
yes.
but it's experiential as well, so. Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's not, here's the point. if you're making art for yourself, that's good. That's great. If it's cathartic, wonderful. But ultimately, I believe we as artists have a responsibility to produce for an audience. And I think that's a two-way street because we also need to be critiqued. Without criticism, we don't grow. I've talked to so many artists over the last few years who just eschew any sort of negative comment. And to me, that's insane. That's like a similar statement I heard a few years ago from someone whose work I was looking at, and I commented on it in a reference. I said, it reminds me of this. And she said, oh, well, I don't look at anything. I don't refer to any subject matter. I want it to come entirely from my own soul. And I thought afterwards, well, actually, I thought immediately, that's impossible. You're drinking in data all day long. There's all sorts of visual stimulus. Then you're imprinted by that, and it's going to be regurgitated somewhere. So this process of seeing and then producing, I think, involves not just the... not just the artist, but also the viewer.
Right, right. Well, I agree on so many levels. It's part of the struggle, I think, though, for the artist to know what to paint.
You know? Yeah.
Because when you're considering all those things, you know, what story are you going to tell? Who wants to have anything to do with this story? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
You can see I've ended up painting my children a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They're beautiful women.
And fortunately, they're great models. I mean, you've got some stunning work.
Yeah, but I
course of action.
I actually have stories in these that I kind of don't even want to share. It's like, mm-hmm. you figure it out. But mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big complexity of being an artist, is what's the story you're going to tell. I think we've gone off on a tangent because you were talking about the collages,
yeah.
and getting deep into the philosophy too, and all the little secrets or things that you can see within.
Well, the philosophy, and I don't know that much about it. I don't want to pretend to be an expert in this field at all. I work with experts, and they tell me how it
I
works.
Pretend to be an expert all the time.
Yeah, well, I'm an ex and a spurt, but I'm not sure if I qualify to make comment on every aspect of this. But an example, in what I'm referring to now as hospital art, that's a pretty general term. A horizon line is preferred, particularly in a landscape, because that gives a place to go to. There's something off in the distance, so there's hope in that. One of the things that I've done in several paintings is you create a hide space, a safe place, where the viewer is looking through foliage or past a foreground to a midground and then onto a horizon. So they're safe in this place looking out. Potted plants don't work so well because they're stayed and trapped. So just those kinds of things that I've learned, you know, by producing work for these. And to the point that you just made a few minutes ago about deciding what to paint, most of the time for me, because I came back to this, remember, I came back to art as a career after having left it for many years in my late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And there weren't many other options career-wise. That I was sort of forced to do what I knew how to do because that's where the work came to me that way. So the point I'm making is, I didn't come back for fame and glory. I came back to art as a career to make a living. And that meant I was going to take commissions and I was going to do things. I was going to execute based on what other people's desires and needs were. I was going to tell other people's stories.
Right.
And so that's a lot of what I have done.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's frustrating because I don't get my own voice very much involved. But I'm also very thankful that I have some craft, I have some skills, I've got some knowledge, and so I can make a living at this. But I, like anybody would, long for more opportunity to run past those fences, if you will, of
sure.
economy and time.
Exactly. Mm. No, that's reality. Mm. Yeah. So I was going to ask you if you really enjoy doing commissions, but you answered that question.
Well, I do. I enjoy them, and some more than others.
Sure.
Some are just hard work. But
yeah. Have you ever had a client who's like, no, like 20 times and you changed it 20 times?
Not 20, because I learned early how to keep that from happening.
Okay.
That happened once when I was still a graphic artist. And when I say graphic artist, a lot of folks don't know what that means anymore. We were working on a board, like a drafting table with an X-Acto knife and a Rapidograph. That was graphic arts.
Okay.
I also worked for a little while at a place called National Photo Labs here in Houston as an illustrator, and we did old-time cell animation, like Disney-style color of the cells.
That's so cool.
It was a great thing to learn. And I did that for oil companies and engineering firms for a while. I did slide presentations for, I guess, 6 or 7 years. I was working as a freelance artist before I left that. And I've also been a sign painter.
Wow.
I did that for a while.
I actually aspired to be a sign painter when I was a kid. I was like, I wanted to get up on those billboards and do that.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun to fall off the scaffold.
And that's a strong possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might fall off a ladder in this studio one day.
I hope not.
Yeah. I say that all the time. I'm like, I shouldn't be up here.
It's a short trip, but I'm...
Anyway. So, what about your studio is in Spring Street, 119.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How long have you been in Spring Street?
6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And I mentioned to you right before we got on air that you're the consecutive Spring Street artist that I'm interviewing. So mm-hmm. Spring Street's representing right now. So that's
We're glad to do that.
Yeah. I love Spring Street. I love them all. Everyone has a different flavor.
It's a beautiful building.
It's just a beautiful building.
And the Carters make such excellent exhibit space. I mean, it is a gallery deluxe. That's one of the things I love about it. And of course, I love my neighbors. But the building itself just offers such a tremendous opportunity for exhibits.
Yes. Do you have anything hanging right now?
Well, we've just taken everything down for PhotoFest. So the walls, we've removed everything in the Carters, and they've repaired all the... and patched and painted. It's all fresh and waiting for those folks.
Yeah. I like PhotoFest for the most part, but, you know, they take over the...
Oh, they do. Yeah, they do. The one thing I like about PhotoFest at Spring Street, and I don't know, it's not necessarily true every year, but at least two of the years that I've been there when PhotoFest arrived, they brought in a very sophisticated audience.
Yes.
And so when those visitors came in the studio, and I'm not saying that they necessarily became collectors of mine, but they did offer some excellent conversation, and it was just always a lot of fun to meet those folks.
And they get introduced to the campus, which is great, because it's so weird. There's 4 million people in Houston, 4 million people in Houston that possibly don't know about
it. I hear it all the time. People walk in the studio and say they don't know.
You guys have the special problem of not being physically connected.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a problem. One thing I do like as far as Second Saturdays go is you distinguish yourself by having the later hours.
Right.
So you do the Second Saturdays 2 to 7.
Yes.
And you participate.
Yes, I do.
You're there all the time.
Most of the time.
Most of the time.
Unless there's something really important that I have to do otherwise. But yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there this Saturday.
Sweet. I'll be here this Saturday too. Before Spring Street, though, have you had any other studios in Houston?
In Houston?
Are you a Houstonian?
No, but I got here as quick as I could.
Yeah?
As I mentioned, I was born in Memphis, raised in rural Mississippi. My mother and father both, my dad was not born in Texas, but my mother was. And we lived in Abilene for about 3 years. And then eventually moved back to Mississippi, which is the ancestral home ground. My brothers moved back there now. So I had two sets of grandparents, I guess like everybody. And my grandmother Gordon and grandfather Gordon were in Pachuta, Mississippi. Now that's a name for a small hamlet. Pachuta in Choctaw means place where pigeons roost.
Oh.
And they did.
Okay.
So that was where the farm was. And so I was raised pretty much in a rural environment. Went to a consolidated school, bused for a couple hours every day. It was an interesting place. I loved the outdoors. As a young man, I spent all of my time outdoors. I got away from the farm during the summers. I worked at the Boy Scout camp. Was real big into scouting. So that was my growing up.
How many kids in your high school graduation class?
Under 100.
Yeah.
Class of 69. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
Yippee.
Yeah. I graduated in 79.
Really?
With 53 graduates, and no one's beat us yet in Centerville, Louisiana.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another adult. I grew up in the tiny town, too.
Yeah. Well, this was a consolidated school. This was all the little hamlets came together into the bigger county seat. So it was, even so, it was still very small.
Yeah, elementary school to high school, we were all in the same thing. I mean, my uncle was, I guess, 5 or 6 years older than me. He's in high school, and he knows I'm going to his mom, to my grandmother's that day, and he was looking at me, shaking his finger, and I was like, "Yeah, I know. Don't play with your train set." He's like in high school, and he's like, "Ah!"
Yeah.
So like the high schoolers and the elementary grade kids, we didn't hang out together, but we were physically side by side, the buildings and everything. Yeah. So super small. Yeah. I can't complain. I like to tell people I got a private education that way, actually. It was public school, but I got a private education.
Well, there was, for me as well, everybody knew my grandmother.
Yeah.
That's
not good.
Well, you look back on those times, and there was a cohesiveness about that. There was an aspect to that that you felt.
Uh-oh.
That's not supposed to happen. I thought we dealt with that.
Oh, those pesky creatures.
You knew that if you did something you weren't supposed to do, that someone was going to be watching.
Oh, I know. That's what I mean when I say, oh, no, that's not good, because I know. My grandmother was friends with the sheriff. I got a speeding ticket one time, and I was like, hey, Mom, can you ask Sheriff Nakhan to take care of this for me?
Mm-hmm.
She's like, oh, yeah, sure. So, I mean, I thought it was a good idea, right up until the time we got in the elevator and we're going upstairs. And I was like, this is kind of embarrassing, asking my grandmother to help me. I was a young adult.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, oh, you're embarrassed now?
Yeah.
With the suggestion that, oh, and I was like, let's press this button and go back. Yeah. Never mind. I'm going to pay that bill. But yeah, I understand. But those are all very, very positive memories for me now.
Yeah, they do turn out that way. I was almost drafted.
Okay.
And
almost.
And this was really interesting. I got the draft call. This was in 1970.
Mm.
Okay. And I was not interested. There was a war raging in Southeast Asia. And people were coming back that I knew in body bags. So that was, there were a lot of reasons I didn't want to go. But I had a high lottery number that summer. And I knew, I mean, it was a 360 something. I knew I wasn't supposed to get a draft notice. So when I got I reported, and this goes back to the small town thing. The woman who ran the draft board in this local office kept insisting that she knew I was supposed to get on that bus and be inducted. And I kept saying, no, you need to check the folder again. You really need to look at this again. And finally, when the bus arrived and everybody was loading, I got more insistent, probably more than I ever had with an adult at that point. And she looked in the folder, and sure enough, she dropped it in the wrong jacket.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank God you said something.
But the small town, I mean, the lady was so sure she was right, she was a friend of my grandmother's.
Oh, yeah. I know. Well, that's the problem, I think, maybe with some of the things.
Oh, it's just a problem with people. We get set in our ways.
People don't get to spend the time to get to know someone.
Mm-hmm.
And those things are by, what do you call it?
Association.
Accidents is association. But they think they know you because they know your grandmother.
Right.
And they absolutely assume that they can take an interest in you because of that relationship. And today, we don't have time to get to know each other. I'm guilty of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like the road rage and the this and the that, so it's really good to sit down and try to get to know someone a little bit, and then you can.
Well, since we're talking about social issues, I just to interject this, I think having experienced both, living in a large metropolitan area, more than one large city in my lifetime, and also having grown up in that extreme rural environment, there's pluses and minuses to both. But the big deal, I think, is what you're saying, the connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
In that rural situation, if there was a fire, everybody showed up to help.
Okay.
If there was anything that happened, everybody knew and contributed.
The reliance is important.
There's that, but there's also a deep sense of this is our community, our larger extended family, if you will. And you can live in an apartment building here in Houston and never know anybody, and they never know you until the news people show up and you've been accused of something.
Oh, bad. There's a bad
smell. Yeah, bad smell.
Oh, gosh. Yes, we've lived in the big city. Mm-hmm. We have that, too. So, do you work in your studio every day? Are you there?
No, I do not work every day.
You have a home studio.
I have a home office, and okay. I do the office work at home, and I sometimes stray from the work, and then I come and I'll work for 18 hours.
I'm shocked to hear that an artist strays from.
Well, I don't work, you know, there are so many things about the way I work that I wouldn't suggest anybody do. These are not recommendations. Everybody knows you should punch this out at least an 8-hour day every day. But the way I typically work is I'll work an 18-hour day. I'll do one or two of those a week, sometimes a couple of 10-hour, you know, a string of 10-hour days, and then I'll knock off for a few days.
Yeah.
And I don't do anything. It's not like I'm going home to another hobby or anything. I mean, I'm pretty much veg, and then I come back and hit it raw.
Refuel in that veg.
No, okay. I feel like.
I love laying in veg and watching movies.
That's the kind of stuff, and I watch a lot of movies.
I thought about this too. It's like, My grand plan to success, you know. But seriously, I'm like, I have to paint for 12 hours for 3 months, and then I'm going to be, you know, marketing for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe have part of that is another month of just building mm-hmm. websites and connections and this and that and that. I mean, next thing you know, shoot, the year's gone by, and hopefully you got 20 paintings done in that year, but it's crazy.
Well, you know, when I was young, I'd do 5 or 6 a day, and they were not bad. They weren't great. Mm-hmm. And I think when I came back to this, again, partly because I took the approach more of a craftsman, not so much a creative as someone who just, you know, applied skill. I spend more time on the work now than I did then. I'm less prolific, but I feel like when I finish a piece and I release it for exhibit, that it's as good as that piece could be.
Yeah.
As opposed to just churning them out. And that's the difference also, I think. You know, again, this stirs another point. I'm still struggling with that issue of production or experimentation. I love the process too much.
Yeah.
I love the process too much. That's why I keep going back to the abstractions. There's such a problem-solving routine there. Routine's probably not the right word, but there is a structure to it. But it's always a surprise. Mm-hmm. There's always something there that invites a strategy, a new strategy. There's always something there that's not the way you want it, and you have to figure out how to get it to where you want it, mm-hmm. as opposed to a portrait. Mm-hmm. Whereas a portrait, the objective is, let's make it look like the person.
Like this, yeah.
To me, that's a whole different skill set, and sometimes not, even though it's very rewarding in the end, mm-hmm. it's not as exciting in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll be honest, my weakness is the process. Yeah. I spend way too much time painting things that nobody will ever see.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
It is, unless you're trying to make a living.
Oh,
yeah, there's that, yeah.
Darn.
Yeah. Consequently, I don't have as many pieces to account for the number of hours that I've spent in the studio.
I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I understand. We should have some sort of ceremonial bonfire where I could feel good about throwing some things in that bonfire.
Well, most of the things that I would throw in that bonfire would have very little to do with the art at all. I have too much junk in my studio. It's become a nesting place for things that should have been discarded. Well, actually, were discarded, and I found them and thought
that. I used to do that a little bit.
Oh, I picked up some stuff this morning. It's ridiculous. I am the dumpster diver. I am the scavenger king.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm interested in your... treasures already,
come to the studio. I'll open some drawers and pull out some. It's just ridiculous.
I'm interested in all that stuff too, but I've gotten pretty good. Well, first of all, my space is limited. I mean, I just can't.
Space is the final frontier. Yeah.
When are they going to let us have studios out there?
You know, they're launching apparently sports cars into the.
I know. I saw that. It's cool.
Yeah, eventually it'll be a studio.
When we were chit chatting when you first got here, a painting in Delgado. University?
No, the Delgado Museum is in New Orleans.
I haven't been to the Delgado Museum in New Orleans.
Well, New Orleans was the cultural center for me growing up where I did, and my dad at one point had offices in New Orleans, and I couldn't have been 14. I mean, I try to remember exactly how old I was, but I know I wasn't 16 yet. He would turn me loose in the quarter with a map and less than $20, maybe $10, and say, I'll meet you at the morning call at 7, and you be there, don't be late. And we'd have dinner at the end of the evening, and I'd tell him what I saw, and you could do that back then. I don't think the quarter is that safe now.
No.
But anyway, one of the things you could...
You were probably 6 feet tall, though, when you were 13.
Yeah, but I've always looked young. I mean, I grew the beard because I got arrested when I was a student teacher. They kept stopping me in the hall, asking me for a hall pass. I mean, I've always looked younger than I am. And the consequence of that was I grew a beard, so when I taught, I didn't have that problem. But, no, it wasn't that. What it was I was obedient. I didn't go outside the margins until I was older, and my father knew he could trust me, and I trusted him. I did whatever he told me.
Yeah.
So I didn't go outside the area on the map that he'd marked. I didn't go in those places where I wasn't supposed to go, and the little rules that I did, you know, hedge on, like buying a cigar, didn't matter that much anyway.
Okay.
You know, or peeking in the strip clubs, that didn't matter that much anyway. But the Delgado. So you could ride the bus. I'd get dropped off in the quarter, and would ride the bus to the museum,
nice.
And then take the bus back to meet Dad.
Is that museum still there?
I can't answer that specifically because I haven't been in years. But I haven't heard anything about it closing.
But you said you walked up the stairs and there was a bureau, and it was just like.
Well, I teared up.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was that impressive, and I don't remember the name of the painting. I hadn't thought of that lately, but it was Cupid whispering in the ear of this beautiful woman, and they both glow.
Mm-hmm.
The whole painting glows,
mm-hmm.
And it's as if they're breathing. It's as if they're going to step out of the frame,
mm-hmm.
And the mastery.
I know. I was just reading.
It's just uncanny.
His I think it's just a website. It's called Underpaintings. You have to pay $20 a year.
Mm-hmm.
But I do pay the $20 because you get so much information. And they were talking about his mediums. And I was like, well, first of all, it's like flying over my head. But the man was technically
mm-hmm.
outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how he was dismissed in the latter part of his career, I don't even know.
I don't get it either.
Yeah, but there, William Bouguereau's.
Well,
I don't think I'm saying his name correctly.
The Pre-Raphaelites in general were celebrated to a certain extent, you know, and even with the Art Nouveau people like Mucha and all the posters that came out in the 60s. And I think that and what I saw at the museum were the things that drew me to that whole period.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always influenced me. You know, the thing that influenced me the most as a young man about art was picture books. Both of my grandmothers had... sets of encyclopedias and book of knowledge and just picture books.
Mm-hmm.
And looking through those and seeing the representation of so many historic events, because the other thing that I guess I was most interested in was the two things that pulled me the most as a young man were science and history.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think those culminated in my love for illustration.
Mm.
So... I didn't have a lot of opportunity to go to museums is the point, but when I did,
wow.
I drove people nuts because I asked so many questions.
Yeah, that's awesome though. I think I was an adult before I went to a museum.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens when you're in a place where there's only 50 graduates. But anyway.
I understand. Well, like I said, we had to go, you know, quite a ways to get to one.
And I did go to the city, I think it's called the City Museum in New Orleans
mm-hmm.
a few years ago. You take the trolley, will take you all the way there. You get dropped off. It's like at the end. And then you walk down the
Is
wall.
It in the park?
Yeah, maybe it's...
Well, see, that's what I'm referencing to is the Delgado was...
Maybe
the same place.
Yeah. If you're from Louisiana... And you're hearing this, and you have a
license, tell
me. You can go in for free.
And maybe I'm mispronouncing Delgado. Maybe it's some of
that. No, I think it's right. But I was like, oh, darn, I don't have my Louisiana driver's license. I could have got in here for you.
Mm-hmm.
$5, whatever it is. But anyway. Well, you had an interesting upbringing then.
I did.
Clearly you were.
I was very supported by my parents. Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. awesome. And you were, but you had that natural curiosity that leads to intelligence.
Oh, it also got me in trouble. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, no.
Sure.
Well, Ron, I really appreciate you coming in, being on the podcast.
Mm.
We could keep going.
Yeah. Let's do that again.
Let's do it again.
I'm enjoying it so much.
I made the intro that I'm
Can we have coffee next time?
I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. Tea. I'm just, tea would be good too.
Yeah. I tell everyone, I meet a lot of people at these little happy hours that we have where mm-hmm. we can get to know each other. And so it's been so exciting that we had that little chat, had a little studio visit, was able to get you to come on.
Yeah.
And I'll encourage everyone to visit Second Saturday at Winter Street's Spring Street Studios, yeah. Our sister studio over there, and visit Ron in Studio 119, 2-7.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can go to the website too. The website is not a sales venue. It is entirely a portfolio. People ask about that all the time. I get inquiries about, can I buy this piece? And
yeah.
No, it's pretty much, there's only one page on the website that has items still available. But the website is rgordonart.com. That's R, letter R, Gordon, okay. G-O-R-D-O-N,
okay.
art.com.
Very good. Thank you. Mm. I think I gave your email in my intro, too.
So. Oh, excellent.
Yeah. You're not big on email, though. You want people to call you?
No, I'd rather people call, but I just don't check email more than once a day. What I'm really not big on is Messenger, because I just mess up on Messenger. I just don't check it often enough.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. They've got a couple ways to do it. Yeah. And one thing you can do is march on down here at Second Saturdays and visit us.
That's right.
Because I love Second Saturday, and I really like to promote it more than any of the bigger events.
Mm-hmm.
But because that's when you can talk to the artist.
Mm-hmm.
You can really get what's going on with the piece. You can buy directly from the artist.
Yeah.
You can negotiate. That's fine, you know. And people should come and try to do that. You want to become a collector. You want to start your legacy with art.
You know, the thing I like about Second Saturdays the mostest is the fact that it's an open studio. You actually get to come in and see, for the most part, where art is made.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's exciting.
I think that's good for everybody.
I still like that.
It's good for me because I have to clean up once a month.
No comment.
Yeah, it's true. Well, he's not really clean
Look,
up.
Have,
just
I have
kind
some
of
fabulous
rearrange once
I need
a month.
Mop. Can mm-hmm. someone bring me a mop? Anyway, well, again, thank you so much, Ron.
My pleasure.
Gordon, for coming in. I really appreciate it. Remember to visit him at Second Saturday 2-7 at Spring Street. Those guys are open later than we are. And you can find me here, Winter Street, Studio 18. And subscribe to the podcast. Look forward to the launch party. And tell your friends about Sawyer Yards, Winter Street, Spring Street, Silos, Silver. And I will be interviewing other artists in Houston. This is Artist of Houston. You can find us at artistofhouston.com. You can listen there or on iTunes. Subscribe to the show and help put us on the map. Have a great day.